This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
This year, we've been bringing you an occasional series of conversations with New England college presidents. From UMass to Harvard, we've talked to the leaders of public and private colleges, also old institutions, and today, one of the nation's newest. The Franklin W. Olin College of Engineering in Needham is just 10 years old. It was created to address two related crises. One, America is not graduating enough talented engineers. And two, it may be the very nature of engineering education that's driving the most talented minds away from the field. Enter the Olin Foundation. For the past 60 years, the foundation's been mostly giving away money to established campuses to build new buildings. But in 1993, the foundation's board wondered, why do that when we can build an entirely new school and an entirely new educational model from the ground up instead? They did. And in 2002, Olin College welcomed its first class. It's interdisciplinary to its core. There are no academic departments at this college, no tenure for faculty. Students dive into projects, not abstract theory, from day one. As Olin President Richard Miller said, the college is creating engineers who are comfortable as citizens and not just calculating machines. I recently visited the Needham campus and talked with President Miller about Olin College's ambitious goal to revolutionize education. We started with Miller's own story about why he fell in love with engineering.
I actually grew up on a farm in a very low-tech community. In fact, pictures on the wall behind you show the community that I grew up with.
And my dad told me,
in California. My dad said, if you don't go to college, this is what you'll do for the rest of your life. And it was hot and not very comfortable, and I thought maybe I'll go ahead and take that extra calculus class.
Were you a kid who tinkered a lot just on his own when you were young?
Oh, yeah. I loved to make things constantly. In fact, I was very interested in aircraft and in rockets, and I would make them. And the thing that I knew something was wrong because I had more fun making them than flying them. And there was a movie that played when I was in college, 2001, A Space Odyssey, okay? This was all about sending people to the moon in a commercial airplane, sort of. And everyone assumed, how could you not pick a career that would be better than this? I mean, majoring in aerospace engineering was, you know, automatically a guarantee for a future of prosperity in America. Our assumptions about what the future will hold, what the right sciences are, what technologies are going to unlock the future, are always colored by our current experience, and we almost always are surprised by things.
And one of the reasons behind such repeated surprise, Miller says, the engineering establishment has become more interested in graduating more engineering professors than actual practicing engineers.
Engineering is an unusual discipline. Most engineering faculty members have PhDs. In fact, almost all of them today have PhDs. Most of them publish papers in reviewed journals in order to be promoted. They are concerned about impressing their peers in the engineering education world with the cutting-edge nature of the research that they do. On the other hand, very few of them have actually worked at a corporation and gotten a paycheck for making things work, for building cars or airplanes. So does that matter? Well, if you look at other disciplines, it's unusual. If you look at medicine, it's very common for faculty members in a medical school to earn the majority of their compensation from clinic fees. They actually practice medicine. So this has even developed now a sense in the community that engineering is a body of knowledge.
Rather than a practical skill set?
Engineering is a process. It's about curiosity. It's an adventure, right? You don't know what the answer is before you start. There's also a difference between being a scientist and being an engineer, which we've kind of forgotten in the engineering world. And Olin was sort of created to remind us that. And basically, scientists ask why, as they make a hypothesis and then go test it. Engineers ask why not, as they try to invent things that never existed.
But it also occurs to me that it's not just concern over the type of education and the quality of training that engineering students were getting, but just the sheer number of young people who are deciding to be engineers. I mean, the number's been, I don't know if it's plateaued or going down, but I believe the Department of Defense even recently said it's approaching a national security crisis because we're not graduating enough young people who want to be engineers and scientists, but also specifically engineers. So it seemed that there's this rising acknowledgement that there's a need to somehow make this a field that you want to attract young people to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, in the last year, I believe the percentage of bachelor's degrees in the U.S. that were awarded to students majoring in engineering was 4.5%. And this is lower than it was a decade ago. The trend is clear. In addition to that, among the students nationally who choose to major in engineering as freshmen, about half of them don't graduate in engineering. So we have a problem here.
So here's how Olin College is trying to solve that problem. Miller likes to use a musical analogy. No one ever learns how to play an instrument by first learning about musical theory, he says. And then maybe they might learn the science behind acoustics and then instrument design. You learn by simply picking up the instrument and playing. So why do we force student engineers to spend their first years in college learning abstract physics and chemistry?
So the very first day the students arrive, they are put together on teams and they are involved in designing and building stuff. Now, this is before they've had the science and math, because the process of design doesn't depend on science and math. I mean, look, go to Europe and have a look at the cathedrals. This is before Isaac Newton, okay? Somehow it goes against today's notion of what engineering requires. If they had waited until the calculus was invented before they tried to do something like that, we wouldn't have those things. So at Olin, right away, students have to begin to design. That's a theme in Olin that goes all the way to the senior year. Every semester, students work together in at least one class, doing something to create something that didn't exist before for the purpose of bettering the lives of some group of people they can identify. And they do that probably 10 times before they graduate. At the end of the 4 years, they have a requirement, which we call SCOPE, which is a senior capstone. But it's unusual in that they work for a year for a corporation that's paying $50,000 for the outcome. One of the projects that students worked on recently is the development of a robotic tuna fish with Navy support. The goal is to create an autonomous underwater vehicle that can swim without a propeller at up to 70 kilometers an hour with an energy efficiency which is better than anything that we've seen.
President Miller, I hear that there's this sense of innovation, practical application, and interdisciplinary education that really runs through a student's experience at Olin College. I'm also curious to hear a little bit about how that same sensibility works with the faculty, because I was reading that there's no tenure for faculty at Olin College. Why have you decided to do that?
The process that we use in sort of globally now in higher education that involves tenure and academic freedom and decentralized control of most decisions works against the idea of sweeping change in the way you think about things. Olin does not have academic departments. So we found that those create tensions, particularly, and barriers to collaboration across disciplines. People's identity is defined by their department rather than by the experience that the students are having. So, in fact, our goal is that when students are learning, they won't be able to tell you the kind of problem they're solving. I don't know whether this is a math problem or a physics problem or an engineering problem. I just know that if you're going to do this, you have to learn this stuff in this way. So one of our faculty members is Professor Diana Dabby. Now, Diana is a professor of electrical engineering and music. Turns out she started her life as a concert pianist. So she's played solo at Carnegie Hall in New York. She's taught occasionally at Juilliard. At sort of mid-career, she became concerned about electronic music because she was an acoustic pianist. She went back to school, completed a PhD in electrical engineering at MIT, and when we found her, she was teaching circuit design at MIT on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and music theory at Tufts University on Tuesday and Thursday. And she wasn't telling the other one what she was doing. because she said, I will be marginalized if I do that. They won't take a musician seriously if I raise a question about, you know, digital signal processing, and vice versa in the music school. So we told her, no, it's time to come out of the closet. This is the kind of multidisciplinary, multiple intelligences that we're looking for.
You know, I think that there has been a sense in the past maybe 10 years that this sort of interdisciplinary, meaningful education is really necessary for the 21st century. But here's a question that actually has been weighing on my mind for many years now about what happens to engineers after they graduate from college. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I know of people, family members, friends, folks that I've talked to who love being an engineer. But when they graduate, there's just not that much money in it, for example. There's a lure to go into things like finance because you can just make a lot more money. Right now, it just seems like the opportunity cost of staying an engineer is pretty high when you could, for people who are as intelligent as Olin students, you could actually go into many other fields where you'd be making more money. Like, how mm-hmm. can we overcome that draw away from engineering? Mm-hmm.
I think engineering has painted itself into a corner by this vision that to be an engineer, you have to solve differential equations all day. And as soon as you stop solving differential equations, you no longer qualify as being an engineer. Our definition of what an engineer is a person who envisions what has never been and does whatever it takes to make it happen.
I wonder if it's because they actually sense the value of what they're doing while they're in school.
Well, it's a passion for them, and they're willing to make sacrifices to make that happen.
Everything that you're describing that Olin is doing sounds, you know, very innovative, very new, very exciting. But it's only possible, it seems, because A, it's a new school. It's only 10 years old. And B, you have, what, fewer than 500 students? Is there any, I hope, to, you know, scale up the Olin model to larger colleges and universities?
Yeah, this is a really key issue. In fact, that was the purpose of Olin to begin with, is to create a new paradigm for engineering education and to be a catalyst for change in engineering education more broadly. If this can only be done at Olin College on this little campus, then it's probably not successful. So Olin has been actively trying to work with other institutions to see what can be transferred. Probably the most mature scale-up experiment that we have underway is a partnership with the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Now, that's an institution which is about as different from Olin as we could find. Olin has 350 students enrolled. The University of Illinois has over 40,000 students enrolled. In spite of that, over the four-year period, Illinois has been more and more and more interested and enthusiastic in the results of their experiment, to the point that this year, all 1,500 incoming freshman engineering students at the University of Illinois are involved in a program which was co-invented by faculty at Olin and faculty at Illinois working together as a team. So it's really not about the courses that Olin has. I think if you tried to take any one of our courses in isolation and take the syllabus, videotape the lectures, and just plant it, it wouldn't work. It's not about the course. It's about the principles behind the course. It's about intrinsic motivation, design thinking, and empowering students.
Well, Richard Miller is the president of Olin College. And President Miller, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Richard Miller is the president of the Olin College of Engineering in Needham. It's a very interesting take on education, so let us know what you think about it at radioboston.org.
Too darn hot. That's what a lot of New Englanders have been saying this summer as we enter the third week of near or over 90 degree weather.
Radio Boston intern Megan Dooley went to Copley Square today to find out how people are coping with the heat.
My name is Rochelle. I'm from Malden, Mass. I think it's much hotter this year. Usually we have one or two days that are over 90. And this year, it's been 2 weeks at a time, and I think it's been excessively hot. More so than usual. More so than the last 5 years, I think.
Cindy from North Reading, Mass. We're only into the beginning of July, and I don't remember a summer that's been this hot this early. for this long.
Janet from Providence. I guess, you know, I feel like we didn't really pay for the winter. The winter wasn't so bad, but the summer's been really incredible. There's nothing we can do about it, right?
My name is Donald. I'm from Dorchester. I've been staying indoors a lot. The humidity is incredible. You know, the 90 degrees ain't that bad, but when it gets really humid with that, it's very destructive. Over the weekend, I had some gardening to do. It's just too humid to go out there. The breeding is difficult, and it's not worth it. I put it off until next weekend.
And for what it's worth, I'm pro-heat. And it looks like the heat wave is here to stay, at least for the next week or so.
And just remember to stay safe, stay hydrated, wear that sunscreen, and find shelter when you need it.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Stay cool and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot.